Moving on now to the last talk of the day. We're very fortunate to have Dave Legvold here, who's retired. But really, he continues to keep his oar in the water in many ways. I hear he used to be the executive director of the Cannon River Watershed organization. But he's here today to talk about some topics of interest to him in his capacity as a current farmer. And he's going to talk about rethinking a nitrogen budget from the standpoint of a cheap Norwegian farmer. And I understand he's going to have a little bit of help from a St. Olaf student, Rebecca Spur, and I'll let him introduce her.
When I titled this a while ago, we were in jest and had a tongue-in-cheek attitude about cheap Norwegian farmers. However, Garrison Keillor is correct when he characterizes us as a cold and dark people who like to keep what is ours. As a cheap Norwegian farmer, I'd like you to regard that as my motivation. If I buy fertilizer, it's mine, I want to keep it. If I raise residue and it's protecting my soil, it's mine, and I want to keep it. If rain and snow falls on my land, for the time being, it's mine, and I want to keep it. And when it comes to nitrate, I apply that and pay a great deal of money for it. It's mine, and I want to keep it and do stuff with it. Moving on to taking a look at not necessarily cheapness, but rather environmental responsibility. In growing corn and soybeans in Minnesota, tillage seems to go hand in hand with being a good farmer. Straight furrows, cover up the residue, make sure it's black. But the liability we inherit is a disaggregation of the soil so that it is loose and easily eroded, and we are also losing organic matter. About 50% of the organic matter in our native soils in the U.S. have been lost due to just plain tillage. So when the soil is worked in the spring and planted and the crop comes up and we get a heavy rain, the nutrients and a great deal of the stuff that I've paid for heads downstream. So I try to avoid this kind of a picture like the plague. I would really prefer to rethink fertilizer for row crops. And I'd like to provide fertilizer based on the crop uptake needs. I'm not going to try to build phosphorus and nitrates. I want high residue. I'll eliminate fall nitrate application. If you have seen the film Troubled Waters, you know that they refer to a leaky system of nitrates, and that's definitely true. So what we want to do is eliminate fall nitrate. When Rebecca and I drove from Northfield to the Twin Cities, it was very disconcerting to see all of the white anhydrous ammonia tanks out there in the fields. People putting on fall nitrate when the soil temperature is not quite at 50 degrees just yet. So I believe that zone placing of the fertilizer in the row instead of broadcasting will help increase the efficiency, use the credit from N from previous crops, and use split applications to feed the crop as it's in the period of maximum nitrate uptake. And I like to use the Iowa State N calculator, which is a dandy tool. You can't really see it, this is too busy, but it helps you to plunk in the sale of your crop, whether it's corn following soybeans, and it gives you the optimum rate that you should be shooting for. And I use this religiously to help guide me in my nitrate choices. I've also, I've repented, and I have become a no-till or a strip-till farmer. What that really means is I don't turn the soil over anymore. This machine that you see here is called the Soil Warrior. It's built in Faribault. And it will carry fertilizer in the large tank that you see, and it tills a narrow strip through the standing crop residue, and it leaves the fertilizer right behind through the use of an air delivery system. So it fertilizes and tills, and I can do that in the fall. In the fall, I generally do a little bit of this, and I can put on P and K. This is basically what the field looked like that Rebecca did her research on. Hopefully this will run. Now, within the two rotating discs that trail the disc underground, there is an air delivery system, and so the fertilizer is going into that zone of turbulent soil. So now what we have is a little bermed up area that contains all of the nutrient that I have applied to the crop. We'll get to that here shortly. Whoops. Go the right direction, I guess. I think I may have locked it up. Anyway, in that zone of fertilizer and soil, okay, this shows that zone of tilled soil, and there's some little white particles in there, and all of the nitrate fertilizer that has been applied for that crop is in that small zone, about 6 inches wide, 8 inches deep. So this soil warrior, to be environmentally friendly, is not cheap. So let's talk about cheapness. This machine was about $84,000, about $10,000 a row. And you want to have automatic steering so that the rows are uniformly placed, and that's another $20,000. So you can see that this is not cheap. Fortunately, Conservation Stewardship Program funds were available. So for agreeing to be environmentally responsible over 5 years, the machine was the purchase was helped. So this is what the corn looks like after planting it in high residue. It's healthy. It seems to roll along. I can adjust the nitrate application in the fields by side dressing. So now you can see the corn is about a foot tall. It is ready to approach its maximum growth state. And this machine was built by me with a grant from a watershed organization. And basically, the tractor carries the tanks in the front, which have the nitrate fertilizer as a liquid, and it is pumped through the white tubes and squirted into the soil behind these cutting discs. So again, in an effort to be have maximum efficiency of the nitrate, I like to place it as close as possible to the growing plants and make sure that it is injected into the soil. So the recipe for corn on a small N is to apply about 150 pounds of fertilizer in the fall. In the spring, 60 pounds of N when my farming cohorts are out there putting on 150 to 200 pounds of N. At 1 foot tall, I put on about 30 pounds. And then we have the total N of 105. But the issue here is that it's concentrated where the growing zone is. And of course, I would like to see what the performance of this is. So coming to my aid was Rebecca Spurr, who is a class of 11 from St. Olaf, and she wanted to do some nitrate research on varying nitrate rates in corn. So please welcome Rebecca.
Don't let anybody convince you that Dave's actually retired. He's far busier than any retired person has any right to be. Keep that in mind. So I was conducting a study on one of his fields that's currently in its second year of corn production. And Dave went ahead and applied different amounts of nitrogen fertilizer to sections of the field in the form of 28% ammonium nitrate liquid fertilizer. So one section, the first section, got 0 pounds of fertilizer. He just ignored that one. The second one got 30 pounds per acre. And then the third got 54 pounds per acre. Which is what the Iowa State N calculator recommended. So this is what's considered optimal economically according to that calculator. And then the last section got 79.8 pounds per acre. All right. So what I was interested in was the residual corn stalk nitrate concentrations, as well as the yield and obviously the economic returns for these different fertilizer treatments. So to look at the corn stalk nitrate concentrations, we did that when the corn was at 80% black layer, which is a measure of its physiological maturity. So what you do is this very technical test where you peel apart the end of a kernel of corn. If you see a little layer of black tissue, it means it's mature. So when 80% of the kernels were there, we took an 8-inch stalk segment about a foot off the ground and sent that into the Minnesota Valley Testing Lab. And what they did was a corn stalk nitrate concentration analysis. And with that analysis, if the corn stalk nitrate was in the range of 0 to 700 parts per million, it was considered deficient, meaning that the farmer probably lost some yield by not applying enough fertilizer. And then if it was in the range of 700 to 2,000 parts per million, that's optimal. And then over 2,000 ppm is excessive, which means the farmer is probably wasting money on fertilizer in addition to having extra nitrogen in the soil that doesn't have to be there. So here we have the corn stalk nitrate concentrations for each of the end treatments that Dave did. So as you might expect, the unfertilized corn was really deficient. So Dave knew right away that he lost some yield there. The 30 and 54 pounds per acre treatments were both in the optimal range. And then the high nitrogen treatment resulted in excessive corn stalk nitrate concentrations. All right, the money aspect. So on the horizontal axis here, we have, again, the nitrogen treatments. And then on the vertical axis, we have gross returns. And by that, I just mean the money that Dave got from selling this corn at, I think it was $5.50 a bushel, minus the cost of the fertilizer, which was 39 cents per pound of nitrogen. So strictly economically speaking, these data would suggest that the more fertilizer you're dumping on the fields, the more profit you're making as a farmer. However, this isn't taking into account the environmental cost of applying too much nitrogen, which you all are very familiar with. And I'd also like to reference a study that another student did last year that was looking at corn stalk nitrate and economic returns for corn fertilized with high and low volumes of hog manure. So what he did, or what he found, was that too much manure, in this case 7,000 gallons per acre, which is about 350 pounds of nitrogen, resulted in very excessive corn stalk nitrate concentrations, and also had a lower economic return than a more reasonable, you could say, level of fertilizer, which was 1,500 gallons an acre. So this would indicate that there is an upper limit to an economically viable level of fertilizer application, and then if you take environmental costs into account, that would probably be even lower.
To dribble or to inject, it does not refer to an old man's urinary tract dysfunction. But what it does refer to is how you apply the fertilizer if you inject it into the soil or if you just dribble it on the top. So my goal was maximum N efficiency. A dandy study done by Blackmer of Iowa State and co-workers revealed that injecting the N gives you an automatic 5-bushel advantage. So in his case, the rate was 100 pounds of N per acre side dressed, like you saw with the machine that I use. And it may also address the loss of N to the atmosphere if it's placed 2 to 4 inches deep. So my 2009 stock nitrate was low, and so I needed someone like Rebecca to come along and do more yield testing and stock nitrate testing. And we found that, indeed, if you use the same rate, if you just dribbled it, you made $1,417. If you injected it 2 inches deep, you made $1,446. These are test plots, and it's experimentation, but it does say you have to do certain things to use your nitrate properly for good crop use.
Can I jump in again quick? Can I jump in again quick?
Yeah.
All right, so in addition to that, the corn stalk nitrate concentration for the dribbled section was much lower. It was deficient. I think it was around 400 parts per million, whereas the injected one was, I think, 1,800. So there you can see that you're losing a lot of N by dribbling rather than injecting.
So part of the other liabilities with N management on the farm has to do with tile water. In my part of the country, we do need to tile to manage the groundwater. When you place tile in the soil to manage soil water, we find that the water table immediately goes to the level of the tile. It would be really nice if we could manage the level of the water in the soil, so that in the spring, when I'm out there with the tractor, I could lower the groundwater and safely drive tractors over drier soil. But then during the growing season, raise the water level in the soil so that the crop could get it. And then when I want to go out with a combine and harvest, then lower the water level again. And technology has helped us with that with this little device, which is a water level management device. Let's see, is there a pointer? Yeah. Right here you can see there are little blocks or logs that can be placed or taken out. And so if you want to lower the soil level of water, you just pull those out from that little square structure in the soil. If you want more water available for the crop, you put the little logs back in. So we can now vary the level of water in the soil. An ancillary benefit is that that keeps nitrogen in the soil to a much greater degree because you're flushing a lot less water out into the tile lines. So many fields are pattern tiled, like you see this, and some of those structures are placed in there, and you can manage quite large areas with just a few of these structures. The liability of tile water is what happens. Does it go right into the lake or right into the rivers? I'm a big advocate of building areas like this, little retention ponds, so that the tile water goes there, evaporates, soaks into the soil, or is used to grow emergent vegetation for wildlife habitat. This is a surge basin. These surge basins are actually farmable because the tile water comes in at one level. There's another set of tile about a couple feet below, and you can farm it in a decently dry year. But if it floods, that's the way you can intercept a great deal of the tile water and use it to grow some form of grass crop or maybe even corn and soybeans. There are also large retention sites where the tile water comes in and it stays while it soaks away or evaporates. And eventually this will become a wetland. But that's just the bare structure after construction. Another technique for managing nitrogen that I've just recently learned about is the wood chip bioreactor. Where you see the word perf pipe, water from the tile system comes in. Then there will be wood chips placed between perf pipe at the top and perf pipe at the bottom, and the tile water is forced through this layer or this bunch of wood chips, and it denitrifies at the rate of about, the discharge water has about 1/5 the amount of nitrogen as when it came in. So the wood chip bioreactor is pretty cheap, it's straightforward, takes very little maintenance, and a trench full of wood chips will service the tile water for about 10 to 15 years without having to dig out the chips. So this shows you a trench where the wood chips have been placed, and now it will be covered, and you can probably cut hay off the top of that, but you wouldn't want to grow row crops there. So that's the end of my presentation. If there are any questions, be happy to take those. Yes, the wood chips can be taken out, and then using a common manure spreader, you load them up and spread them on the field and replace them with new wood chips. And the way we manage trees nowadays, it seems that there's an abundance of wood chips. Two-stage ditches. I have not done that on my farm, but I've seen them, and I kind of like how they address the issue of a stream saying, "Give me back my floodplain." I think we have to consider letting the stream be more natural. The water, this is a side view, yes. The water comes through the tile, it comes against this set of logs, and it must go up and over the top, and that automatically adjusts the level of the water in the soil. Yes, this is perforated tile. Oh, because this is non-perforated tile, and this box is aluminum. It could go through the dirt, but it is going to flow through the pipe and go over these. The other thing that this kind of drainage or all drainage does is to eliminate the need to work the soil over and over just to get it to dry out, and that facilitates no-till, strip-till, high-residue farming. So it's a conservation technique now rather than a just purely drainage. Yes, there's kind of a hotbed of innovators around Northfield, sometimes called weirdos or other coffee shop words. And it's very interesting to go to the coffee shop and they'll say, "What is it that you're doing out there?" Well, okay, that's fine. "So, how'd your corn yield?" I tell them basically what it is. And you have to remember that any numbers for corn yields you hear in the coffee shop, you must multiply by 0.82, which is the LWF, which is the lying weasel factor. No. And I'll be perfectly honest, that was a sampling activity that I did when we started sampling for E. coli, and I was verifying that there was no E. coli in the field drainage before we started applying hog manure that Jessica alluded to. So we were just verifying no E. coli. I can only speak from years past, and low-rate strip-tilled corn with 1,500 gallons of manure out-yielded the conventional tillage with 7,000 gallons of hog manure 3 years in a row. There was 1 year when Rebecca's colleague David Mitchell sampled it, and he found that with adequate rain in the fall, the heavy manure out-yielded the regular. But economically, I lost my shirt because I'm buying the manure as fertilizer. I don't have hogs. So the no-till and that stuff typically yields a little less, but the fuel costs, the equipment costs, and the soil savings, again, satisfies this cheap Norwegian because I get to hang on to everything that's mine. Generally, the typical wisdom is that if you do no-till, you have to use a lot more chemicals. And I'm finding that the weeds have a real hard time emerging through a heavy, heavy mat of vegetative material. And so I can see the difference where I chop stalks for my cattle because that's bare ground. The weeds are up and just growing like everything, but the no-till stuff the next year, very, very little weed pressure. I think these folks can smell the casserole burning in the oven at home. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.